Hello and a big welcome back to Expected Goals. It's been a few weeks now since the season finished. The dust has well and truly had time to settle. I'm, as always, joined by Charlie Benny. Charlie, how are you doing?
I'm well, Liam. Really looking forward to the new season already. We're being spoilt with such a short turnaround. It feels like the season's barely ended and the players are already back in pre-season as we record this pod. So before long, we'll be discussing the first game of the season.
And I mean, with such a great finish to last season, it sort of really bodes well. And that's what we're going to sort of do on the pod today, is have a look back at some of the numbers, review sort of some of the performances, and yeah, just sort of chat everything as sort of a nice culmination of what turned out in the end to be a very positive year, obviously amid all the problems, but sort of a record-breaking season, Charlie, as I'm sure you're aware. The most points you've taken in the Premier League season, 41, of course, eclipsing what we took in 17-18 with the joint highest finish, once again 15th. 47.9 XG we created in total, comfortably our most in the season, with just over 60 XGA, so expected goals against. It's our second lowest, which is 7 more than we conceded in 17-18, which I think is more testament to how good a defensive season that was than anything this season. We weren't unnecessarily, say, too bad defensively, especially when you compare it to last season. But sort of the two of the most sort of pleasing ones for many fans have been the most away points in the season, 19 I've got it down as, and sort of the most points as well from losing situations, as we'd been a team where when we conceded that first goal previously, we hadn't necessarily looked like we were going to get anything out of the game or get back into the game. And I think what you'll agree here, Charlie, was quite promising with that was something we sort of showed across the whole season. This wasn't like a sort of a spate of games. It was, you know, we did this in some tough places, against some tough teams, under a lot of pressure as well. So quite refreshing to break a few records. And would you say deserved?
I would say deserved, yeah. I think that what's key in this instance, and what we've talked about over the season, perhaps as results that have come in that we maybe feel a little bit frustrated with, and, you know, you could potentially see that we might have done even better in some instances in terms of results, is that the actual output is higher, and that's the most important thing. The fact is the points total is higher, the goals scored is higher. So irregardless of the fact that we've had a higher expected goals, and frankly we've had kind of stronger performances with higher possession that suggest that we should be scoring more goals and getting better results, the fact that we're kind of achieving that, the output is there, is really pleasing to see, and there's obviously cause to be positive for the future, because we are still currently underperforming in terms of XG, I believe. So I'm very happy with the way the season's gone. I think it's been somewhat of a transitional season, but we never really felt uncomfortable about our league status. Some points of frustration, teething problems as we move towards a different style of football, but looking at the players that we were able to bring back into our squad for the next season from loan deals, I think there's a lot of reason to be very optimistic for the future.
I'd have to agree on that, without a doubt, to be honest. I think, as we've sort of spoken about a lot on the pod, sort of in more recent times, that you sort of alluded to, Charlie, in terms of XG, is sort of striking a balance, and we really started to see that in the last 9 games of the season. Of course, we had the huge break because of the pandemic, and came back, and you know, we were quite a high possession side in the first block of games, if you want to look at it as that, in the first 29. I think we were 4th or 5th, maybe 6th in the sort of possession table, averaging about 54% of the ball. We had over 50% of possession in just one of the last 9 games, so we really sat back. I wouldn't go as far to say reverting to type, but I think I, for one, found it quite refreshing to see us, and not necessarily with the same personnel that we had under Hughton, but, you know, actually sit back, especially at Leicester, and say to teams, you know, OK, we've been a side this season who have been torn apart on the counter-attack, particularly by Leicester themselves, to say, you know, we have got it in our locker to sit back, defend our box, defend our goal, and say, you know, we're not going to give you any chances. And if we get anything on the attack at the other end, even better. But, you know, we can protect our goal and keep a clean sheet. I think as a side who struggled defensively, to show ourselves as more multifaceted, I think, Charlie, you'll agree, is you know, something really important.
Yeah, absolutely. It shows a flexibility within Potter's kind of managerial style that he's not, he was able to recognise at least particular instances where the points are the most important thing, and kind of managing the season as a long-term competition, and not be hung up in kind of the immediate project. I think that I recall Sheffield United away, maybe Wolves away, as two particular performances where you've got two very strong teams that you wouldn't quite call top six, but Potter managed to recognise the threat that they posed, recognise the importance of picking up points away from home, and that has contributed to our highest tally. If you're a club like us, and you're at the stage of development that we are at, the away points that you pick up over a season, a lot of those are going to have to be draws. You can't really. I think you probably come out of things more often than not on the worst side if you're constantly kind of pressing really high for a victory away from home. I think the disparity in terms of how difficult it is to get results away from home is significant enough that you need to be flexible, and that was reflected in the club's wish to kind of keep what's the word, the normal venues when the behind closed doors football was going to come back, because they recognised the home advantage was significant, even without fans, and obviously Potter is aware of that and has been able to implement more pragmatic techniques also, and Bissouma's been a big part of that too. I want to kind of single him out as someone who's redeveloped his game and shown really strong ball winning qualities.
I think that's been almost a bit of the beauty, as you talk about Bissouma there, Charlie, in terms of sort of having a 29 and then 9 sort of game mini season, is that we've sort of seen certain players, McAllister, another one that's came back into the fold. Tarik Lamptey obviously made his debut and was instrumental, I think, for to give him his full credit, that we've seen perhaps players who performed in the first part of the season and then almost like sort of a knockout tournament. And having been a good cup side in sort of recent years, I think we've sort of shown that mettle to say, we're going to come here in sort of high pressure environments where we know that we need the results, because with all due respect to us, sort of before Neil Mopai netted that winner against Arsenal, we were in serious trouble. I remember being stood at West Ham at the start of February, and I think we were in the relegation zone at half time, which was like, okay, this is sort of really happening now. We've sort of ridden our luck, and thankfully we've still not sat in that bottom three properly, like post a match day. I believe since August back in 2017, before we took a point at Watford. So to actually be able to hold that sort of record that we've had for staying outside the bottom three for so long, I think it's really testament just to how good and how resolute a side that we've been, to say that, okay, when it comes to it, even last season we were poor for a period of time, we still did grind out results when we needed to. So do you think it's fair now, Sean, if we start to then, as you've done with Bissouma, start to pick out sort of some of the best performances from the season?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a number of players that have impressed over the season. Some maybe more expected, obviously, like Duncan and Ryan, who've been here for at least a while now and are very consistent performers. And then some surprise packages as well, as the squad begins to be reshaped. So yeah, let's dive into that.
So should we start with goal of the season then? Is that sort of like the arbitrary opener for these sorts of things? I tweeted this out a while ago as well. I think it was right after full time against Burnley, and had a load of responses from people. So thanks very much for sort of sharing your opinions. It's nice as well, see some of the diversity in answers, as people obviously everyone sees sort of differently. People value different things, so it's quite nice to see sort of a range of people who would give sort of their points to different players for certain things. So we'll kick it off with goal of the season. Obviously, Alireza Iheanbash is a big winner in that respect for his exceptional bicycle kick against Chelsea on New Year's Day, which technique wise is absolutely outstanding. I saw a few shouts for Yves Bissouma as well, but I think I'd have to go for sort of my favourite one here in terms of the actual move itself and sort of the timing in the game, which was the last minute winner against Everton. Which, as someone rightly pointed out, if Luka Dean hadn't have popped it into the net, and it would have been Murray at the back post, because if we're being fair, the ball gone across the 6 yard box, it was going in, whether it was Dean or Murray who put it in the net, doesn't massively matter. But I think, Charlie, you'll agree with me here, to show the level of composure that we did, specifically the likes of Alzate, having the ball right in the edge of his box and back heeling it, Trossard and Byrne combining, Dan Byrne tearing up the pitch. even after 90 plus minutes of being fatigued in the rain. And sort of the interlinking play, for me, that's the one true Potterwell goal I feel that we've scored this season.
Yeah, I think obviously that's a really strong standout moment. And you're right about the fact that if Murray had maybe put that in, then it might have been lauded in a slightly more widespread way. The move is sublime. It's so, so strong. The distribution, the awareness from Ryan, the way the ball is moved backwards and the press is played through really, really strongly. And then when we are in transition and we're running through into their half and the Everton players are trailing with little effect, the composure from Byrne and then Trossard to put the ball in such a great area. It's just sublime. It's just really, really strong. And it's a sort of goal that maybe can't be put down to individual brilliance per se, compared to some, obviously, goals of the season tend to be moments of individual brilliance. But that is something that is, you know, the team deserves strong credit for that, because it's not just the awareness and the ability to kind of carve open a defence like that, but it's the character, and it's the energy right at the end of the game. You love to see a last minute winner in the rain. So for me, that is a really strong contender for goal of the season. I think it is hard to look past Ali Reza's goal, though. That was majestic.
I think it's fair to perhaps put them on the same pedestal. If we look at that, then we can be indecisive here, and we can say as an individual goal of the season, I think it's hard to look past Jahan Bash. And then, yes, a sort of a team goal, a cumulative effort, and a goal as well, which people have to remember, that the win against Everton is so late on in the game, which didn't really sort of get going until the last sort of 15, 20 minutes. I mean, it was 1-0 at half-time, but apart from sort of the set-piece goals from Gross, and then I think it was a Webster-ing goal from a sort of Richarlison header, that the game didn't really ever sort of get going, and it took for Everton to quite nicely carve us apart first and foremost. I think Mason Holgate slotted in. It might have been Calvert-Lewin with a nice finish from sort of a tight angle, and yeah, then we sort of quite fortunately got that penalty, and it all sort of kicked on quite late on. So yeah, I think definitely they're sort of the fair two, which is feels quite harsh on Yves Bissouma, who for all intents and purposes scored an absolutely delightful goal at Burnley. Great to see him finally get off the mark. As you sort of mentioned, Charlie, he's had sort of a real style sort of transformation. Someone who under Houghton we always considered to be more, I think he's still got this in his locker, but he's perhaps less one-dimensional in that respect, is used to be more of a transition central midfielder, someone who would be able to launch you counter-attacks by sort of carrying the ball. Incredibly press-resistant in the sense that he's quite a 360-degree player. He can turn multiple directions. But he's starting to refine his craft a bit more now, which might be a case of you know attributing this to Potter and his work, but maybe just, you know, minutes of Premier League football as well. He came to us from, I think, Lille in France, you know, as a relatively young 21, 22-year-old, and is now starting to develop. So this might just be something that sort of takes time. He's still got the ball-striking ability that he's shown, that the goal against Bournemouth in the FA Cup, and now, obviously, an excellent finish against Burnley. So I've been really impressed, and you mentioned him, Charlie, as sort of being really key. I've been impressed with Bissouma to see him not necessarily be acting further up the pitch, but in fact operating sort of deeper down. My sort of thought process for a long time was I wasn't sure if he perhaps not had necessarily the boringness about him, but you know, Dale Stevens gets quite a lot of hate for, you know, sort of just playing sideways passes and sitting between the centre backs, but it takes quite a lot to sort of do that and pick out the passes and, you know, find intelligent positions where you're not going to be marked out of the game. You know, how much credit does Bissouma deserve for this transformation, and, you know, just how quite significant might it be?
Yeah, I think he's been really, really strong, particularly just before lockdown and then in the 9 games after football returned. I think I've alluded to this prior on a different pod, but I think there's something in me that makes me think that the kind of reinvention of his playing style is something. Initially I was kind of not skeptical, but maybe a little bit disappointed in the way that he was kind of becoming a slightly more defensive kind of ball winning player, but because of his natural ability, and I felt as though he going forward into the tricks and kind of creativity that he could offer would be a really strong asset. And I kind of likened it to Solly March's transformation in terms of in the Championship, such a kind of enigmatic player able to go past people in a very, very kind of free-spirited in the final third, and has kind of regressed more and more into a more defensive winger, and now wing back. So kind of reinventing his skill set, and obviously managers will like that because they want to be able to use players in a different way. But revising that that perception, I think that you don't lose, let's say that you don't lose moments of magic as a player if you're capable of kind of explosive moments of great quality, kind of attacking ingenuity. You're not going to lose that just because you become much better at screening the defence and winning the ball back effectively. So I think it's eminently positive that he's managed to tailor his game and really help us in terms of being able to win the ball back more swiftly. And I think as we kind of move more towards that style, keep trying to keep possession for defensive purposes and also to open up the opposition, being able to win the ball back swiftly is going to be a massive weapon for us. So I anticipate that he will play more and more. He'll feature more and more regularly going into next season.
Do you think that style revamp might actually help him then as well in terms of his playing time? Because you look at sort of the quality we've got in a creation aspect. You've got Alexis Mgallis, who's come back from loan. You've got Trossard, Gross, Moy, all these players who are excellent creators. And with all due respect to Bissouma, as good as his creation abilities could potentially be, it's going to take an awful lot for most players that we would be signing or be developing to come close to that sort of level. So do you think that, you know, it might be a case of if he was going to try and be that sort of attacking central midfielder, that his output just wouldn't even be sort of remotely close to what it would need to be? So this might be sort of quite a nice harmony for Bissouma to sort of be an integral part and something that we don't necessarily have as sort of a central midfielder currently. Do you think, you know, it might benefit him?
Yeah, I think that's a really key point. I think that we do have quite a wealth of options in the sort of attacking midfield now, given that Lallana just joined, and it'll be interesting to see how what systems Potter wants to use, whether he'll want to use two strikers or whether he'd prefer to have single striker surrounded by kind of creative attacking players. So I think Bissouma will be able to slot in nicely, potentially next to Proper, in a kind of holding midfield role. I think Stevens still has very much a part to play, but I will be looking forward to Bissouma being given more opportunities to run games and develop his maturity as a player. So yeah, I think that in essence, I think that it's probably a good thing that he's playing deeper now, and I think that it gives the team more balance and nice energy defensively. I think a comparison you could possibly make is Lamptey. People and myself included, it's very exciting to see him high up the pitch, and I think he's got a lot to offer going forward. But it shouldn't be underestimated his pace as a defensive asset too. I think having him at least as a wing back rather than a wide midfielder is kind of more desirable for us, because I like his pace in defensive situations. I think it gives us a little bit more security.
I agree with that. I think we'll get on to Lamptey soon and give him sort of the full sort of period of time that he deserves, as he's been another player that's been exceptional, really. Arguably sort of one of our best players in the final nine games of the season, which is something that, you know, not many were necessarily expecting to see him play, let alone to that sort of standard. So, you know, really shows quite a coup, if you like, from Chelsea for not a lot of money either, that could quite well bankroll into sort of a large sum if we choose to sell him. Period of time. Is it a sort of a final point on Bissouma before we park him to one side? If anyone's interested in sort of seeing the numbers behind his style of play, there is a Patreon exclusive article that's out that I'll link off the pod. If anyone wants to sort of support the podcast, support the Twitter page, then you can access some sort of exclusive stuff that won't be on the main Twitter page. And Yves Bissouma's got a full full article on him. It's got radars, lots of different bits and pieces on it that really sort of delve in. And sort of all the things that Charlie's touched on there all do sort of come to fruition numerically. And it's really quite interesting to see how these sorts of things have changed. And yeah, his development is being quite fascinating to watch. On the note of that then, if we sort of move on to game of the season now, Charlie, I feel like this might have slightly fewer nominees than others. Everton, the game that we've mentioned already, of course, stands out for the late winner. Spurs as well stands out, you know, for obvious reasons of beating a side of their quality at home. also as well, I suppose Arsenal away, you could quite easily throw into that sort of into that category for performing so well and deservedly winning and doing so in quite good fashion late on. It's difficult to say not to put it in there because I feel like had Arsenal at home and again it wasn't behind closed doors and that being the result, would have quite comfortably made this category. But I feel like it's quite hard to have a game of the season where it's behind closed doors. What would you say?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It was a great watch, or at least the spectacle at the end was a great watch, even from the comfort of my armchair. I think that it's for me. I want to mention it doesn't deserve consideration for top spot whatsoever. But I want to, and I probably talked about it far too much on this pod. But the Newcastle away game was very, very satisfying in terms of seeing the direction that we were going in. It was a really nice, clear indication that we do as a team have the potential to dominate and to play in a particular way and stamp our authority on games away from home at in front of a large crowd and actually, you know, that's you know, the dream is achievable essentially, and we can be effective. Obviously, the fact that the thing that curtails that is the fact that we weren't unable to score, but I'm not sure how we didn't manage to in any case. For me, I think the Arsenal away game was another indication, I think sort of similar to that. Arsenal were not in a good place. Admittedly, they were really struggling. They did not look good. But I felt before the game and obviously as the game played out, you know, we really needed to take, if we played well, we really needed to take advantage. This wasn't just about getting a good point away at a top six side. This was about winning the game. This is about, you know, showing that we are capable of taking advantage of teams when they're not at their best. And the fact that we were able to do that, to find our way to win, and deservedly so after the equaliser, was really nice to see. And a good finish too, a really nice goal. I think it doesn't get talked about all that much, but a really clever header from Morpai for the winner. So that for me is probably up there for game of the season.
I think I'd have to agree there. I think it's harsh to perhaps, you know, demote Spurs with Everton games to lower down the pecking order in that respect, but to set the record and finally win at the top six side. But as you say, the circumstances in which we did it, and I know that obviously it comes with the flip side that Arsenal, I think, was it seven games that they hadn't won in, but I think one of our big problems was previously as a side in the Premier League that we seemed to struggle to be ruthless at times, that we, you know, teams had a good habit of being in bad form coming to us or us going to them and then beating us or taking results off of us. I remember West Brom did, I think Pardew's only win as West Brom manager came against us when they won 2-0, which looking back at it wasn't exactly a game where we dominated. We were quite fairly beaten, I felt, at the time. So yeah, to go to Arsenal and, you know, really reaffirm that, okay, they might be in bad form, but you know, each game is exclusive to itself. There's just nothing to say Arsenal couldn't have come and wiped the floor with us. And you know, having been in the ground that night, you know, when they got that equaliser, and Luiz, I believe, as well, got a goal that was ruled out rightly so for offside, which for half felt like it took forever to check. But you know, to sort of soak up that pressure, and late on as well, once we scored, obviously, I remember Rye making a really smart save, dropping down to his left, I think, to sort of push on wide. So to be nice and resolute, I think Gross and Moy that night for me in particular were exceptional in terms of their sort of chance creation from set pieces, from crosses, as Moy showed, setting up Mapai for the winner. So yeah, I thought thoroughly deserving, and you know, also the added benefit of continuing that run against Arsenal, which we've now progressed even further. So I think it's really nice, Charlie, and you'll agree here as well, as a side who, you know, we perhaps felt like at times that when we came up, we were branded as teams like Brighton, who teams should be beating at home, as we talked about before on the pod, or sort of away from home, minimum get a point sort of thing. So I think we sort of felt like we started to move away from that a bit, that we maybe lost that underdog status a bit in sort of the last couple of seasons. So for us to sort of revert to a scenario where, you know, we were upsetting teams again and they were annoyed that they lost at home to, you know, plucky little Brighton who don't even deserve to be here, I think for me was really refreshing.
Yeah, it's always pleasing to see teams get frustrated against us. I think I'm very happy with that tag. The more that we fly under the radar, the more that teams feel the pressure against us, the better, to be honest. I mean, it's one of those where sometimes you feel, so maybe from the other side, if we look at Sheffield United, I'm sure a lot of our fans would be impressed or at least happy that the idea that, so if we were able to make teams come to the Amex and sit very deep and kind of have to change that, basically forego an opportunity, I guess, forego a desire to go out and take the game to us and win the game, and not make things easier in a sense, but obviously kind of set their intentions out to say that, like, we're happy with nil-nil. We're, you can have a point. I think that's good in principle, in terms of it shows that you're going in the right direction, and then you have to adapt and make sure that you can find your way past those deep line defenses. But ultimately, that becomes more and more frustrating. So I'm happy for teams to underestimate us, to take us for granted, and to feel the pressure when they play us. I like the idea that every team feels like they have to get a result against us, because psychologically that will have an effect, and in terms of the playing output, the way that they'll set up makes them more predictable, at least. I think it makes Potter's job a little bit easier, to thinking that teams will always expect to test us a little bit defensively, and that opens up avenues for us to exploit.
I think so. And sort of moving on now further on that principle, sort of exploiting, we can sort of move on now and talk about sort of individual performance of the season. Aaron Connolly, of course, springs to mind for his home debut performance against Spurs when he netted two. I thought I saw some quite fair shouts as well for Dunk against Arsenal in that first game back post-lockdown. Whether that might be a case of, we haven't seen football for so long, and it being such a big win with Dunk equalising, in the most Lewis Dunk fashion I've ever seen, by the way, throwing his body on the goal line to block a shot in, which actually made me sort of laugh after we scored it, in the sense that as a side who'd tried to progress as such an expansive ball-playing side, that our first goal back in, sort of 3 or 4 months had been because our centre-backs slide-tapping someone on their goal line. But yeah, Charlie, what sort of performances have particularly stood out to you? And I think it'd be good for us as well here if we can maybe touch into ones that aren't exclusively the strikers or defensive players, where it's purely a case of goal prevention or goal scoring. I know you mentioned sort of Bissouma earlier on. I thought he was really, really, really good at Wolves, but before lockdown. So who would you put forward?
I think I want to mention Leandro Trossard against West Ham early on in the season. I mean, he seemed to have kind of changed his approach to games since then, and I miss it a lot. I think that maybe Potter has kind of said to him, probably, for good reason, now limit what you do, pick your moments, stay in one, don't wander all about the pitch, stay. We want you in these areas. These are where you're going to be most effective. That game, I recall him, just the determination to control everything was so strong. He always wanted the ball. He was always demanding it off his teammates. He was desperate to win it back when we lost it. And his output obviously was massive. One goal and a really nice strike too. That might have made it into the goal of the season shortlisted, had it counted. Really nice volley, which was chalked off, and then obviously getting the goal later on to equalise, which again was a very nice strike too. That performance, he was head and shoulders best player on the pitch. I want to say Al Zaita against Newcastle, really, really strong, playing wing back as well. So credit to him for coming into the team and, playing in a position that relatively unfamiliar for him. He hasn't played in that position, in league football prior to that. So those two probably stand out most in my head over the season. I think that the consistent performers like Burn and Dunk, it's almost hard to pick out particular games where they've excelled, because they've been very consistent, particularly Dunk, obviously, that he's been so consistent, and the level that he reaches is always so high. Dunk is unfortunate, because he probably doesn't get as many man of the match awards as he deserves, because everyone expects his kind of standard 8 or 9 out of 10 every single week. So I think that it goes without saying that player of the season, whilst he can't be considered for performance of the season, he's he's a very strong shout, obviously, for a player.
And I think, in all honesty, if you got a centre back who will put you in a solid 7, 8, 9 out of 10 performance consistently, you're going to be, you know, much more desirable as a centre back for a team than someone who might give you the occasional 9/10 out of 10. Purely because I don't know what a centre back could do in terms of defending, to sort of get a 10 out of 10, if that makes sense, Charlie. That, you know, I wouldn't really consider goals or assists, you know, particularly vital for a centre back. That might be the icing on the cake. I suppose first and foremost, it always reverts back to a case of, okay, have they kept their clean sheet? That's always what defenders like to aim for, their sort of version of scoring, if you like. So yeah, I fully agree with you, and that's why, obviously, having seen some of the transfer speculation recently, and it, on the actual morning as we're recording this morning, the speculation of him to Chelsea was quashed quite nicely by both Brian Owen and Andy Naylor. So it was quite nice to see some of their language used, of, you know, saying that, I think the phrase bewildered was used, that, you know, that Brighton found that they were actively surprised that this story had emerged, which, you know, it tells you all that you need to know. And sadly, we do live in a world where journalists will do things for clicks nowadays, and we're used to Lewis Dunk transfer sagas, but I think I speak for everyone, Charlie, when I say that no matter how many Dunk transfer sagas we have, whenever one comes around, it's always scary, because we know there is no physical way we can genuinely replace what Lewis Dunk's given to us over sort of a period of time, and, you know, everything that comes with him. So before we go on a full talk about Dunk, let's move on to sort of signing of the season, because we've, you know, had a very good transfer window, recruited very smartly. Once again, didn't splash the cash compared to some teams. I know that we always get branded with that net spend table that people drag out. But when you haven't got the luxury of selling Dominic Solanke for 30 mil every window, I think you are going to be quite high at that table. So for me, no qualms whatsoever. And now we're sort of seeing us start to sell some players. So Knockhart's obviously gone to Fulham for, I think it'll be around 15 mil in total with his loan fee added on. So, you know, we might start to fall down those table places now, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. Obviously, Neil Mapai will deservedly be thrown in there for his output. We've spoken about him plenty on the pod before. And, you know, something that we were sort of talking about, Charlie, off pod, we were sort of discussing, whereas Mapai might have not been as clinical as some of the other strikers in sort of the Premier League in terms of matching his XG, he scored some important goals. He's also scored some very versatile goals. He's shown he was capable with left foot, right foot, and swing with his head as well, which, you know, for someone of his size is impressive to do. And all bar one goal that he scored of the 10 was when we were already winning. So I think it was, I can't remember the exact numbers, but 9 of the goals that he scored were either winning goals, equalising goals, or opening goals, which are, you know, very, very good goals to score in terms of goal importance. Tariq Lamptey's name will be rightly thrown forward as well, I expect, Charlie. But the one I really want to push for here is Adam Webster. For me, arguably close to as good as Dunk this season for me. You know, incredibly important for the way that Potter wants to play football. You know, it's quite exhilarating, I think is the right word, to sort of see a centre back, you know, go into what they'd call nosebleed territory of getting that ball and carrying it. And he almost, I was, you know, begging for that goal, that short throw against Newcastle to sort of find the net where, you know, he steps in with the ball, keeps going, and, you know, can either pick out a really good final ball or sort of have a strike at goal. I remember him at Newcastle, you sort of alluded to Alzate's performance there, but I thought Webster was exceptional that day as well, making some great runs forward. You know, and just someone that's prepared to take risks, carry the ball, you know, and a really, really good set piece player as well. We've shown that we've still got that set piece ability about us, you know, as sort of a modern and progressive team as you want to be. And I know they get sort of attributed to being a bit old school, a bit old fashioned, but I think it's important to be a good set piece side. And Adam Webster's done that both for himself and for other players. So I think that's valuable. So for me, I'd give Webster my vote. Charlie, your thoughts?
I think Webster's a good shout. He's really come into his own as the season's gone on, and I've been very impressed with him. I think you're right to highlight his attacking output as well, some really important goals for us. So that, you know, that shouldn't be discounted. Obviously, Morpay's contributed a lot, and kind of maybe that's more keenly attended to being a striker. But, you know, Webster's output has been really key also. I think he had moments, I think, where, let's say, Sheffield United at home, where he was struggling with a more direct approach. I think he is still developing in terms of his composure and his kind of aerial ability. Obviously, he's a different player from Duffy. So I think when you have Duffy coming out of the team, you're probably going to have someone like Webster suffer in comparison in terms of, let's say, headed duels won and things like that. So maybe that's an unfair thing to kind of pull him up on. A good talker as well, according to many. And when you're watching the lockdown games, you can hear the players talk more. And you know, he's a very vocal kind of player. So I was really impressed with him. I think I want to give Morpay my vote. I think Trossard deserves a mention as well. 5 goals and a few assists in the debut season is not bad whatsoever. But Morpay having featured so heavily, and I don't want to say displacing Murray, but following on from Murray in a way in his first season, where his age is what it is. I think he's quite impressive, and I think it shows that he, you know, is someone who one to watch, and maybe is going to continue to improve us as the years go on.
I think with Mapai as well, it was quite fitting to see that goal against Southampton, his 10th of the season. Quite a nice way for Murray to sort of pass the torch to him, to, you know, set him up for what is Glenn Murray's only, I think, his second ever Premier League assist for Brighton. So a collector's item in its own right. But I thought that was quite a nice way for sort of the transition to occur of Murray, who's definitely in the twilight years of his career now. And as the listeners actually do listen to this pod, currently in the middle of sort of putting together a piece looking at possible Glenn Murray replacements. So definitely keep your eyes peeled for that. Obviously, he's not someone that any of us want to see retire or leave the club. I don't expect he will. I'd expect him to see him stay on in hopefully some form of coaching capacity, as the likes of Sidwell, Rosinia, Bruno have done, etc. So someone that you'd expect, you know, to stick around, or if not at Brighton, somewhere else. I'd agree with you there, Charlie. I think if you're looking for player of the season, I think definitely in an offensive perspective, Noah Pye's hard to look past. For a very, very decent output, and, you know, shown good capacity in other areas of the game as well, to be quite a well-rounded forward. And when you look at sort of the 20 mil that we paid for him, no one's once really questioned that price tag, which, you know, given the other players that we've had come in, that the likes of Lockerdie, Johan Bash and stuff, have really been sort of branded with that. You know, he's done incredibly well to sort of avoid any discussions over that. Still an under-23 player, although, sorry, he might not be now, because I believe he's had his birthday. Or if he's not, he will do very soon. But a player, you know, who's incredibly talented, and we might struggle to keep hold of, you know, later on down the line. So I think what we'll do now, Charlie, then, is we'll very quickly sort of go through all sort of the players that have featured this season. And we'll sort of give a brief sort of summary, and, you know, ones that we've touched on a lot already, we can quite quickly skim over. So to start with Ryan, how would you sort of rate his season?
I think he's been really, really strong. Obviously, the save against Southampton is kind of maybe the standout moment, and just shows that he's really capable of those big, big moments and kind of, yeah, moments of magic in terms of goalkeeping. I think that we all enjoy a really strong, really, you know, amazing save, whether it's a penalty or, you know, fingertip onto the crossbar. We all enjoy that. I think he's come in for some unnecessary criticism. I think it was highlighted. I think there was a kind of ongoing period where people were concerned about goals conceded at the near post, which I think is maybe at best harsh. I think that a lot of those instances, when you break them down, Sheffield United away, some game in South London, I can't really remember. That was, yeah, you know, it is what it is. I don't think that he's positioning, if you break them down, was anything particularly horrific. And I think when you look at the numbers in terms of expected goals against and expected saves, I think he's performed well. And also, he's able to pass out from the back and kind of build in a way that is what Potter wants. And I think he's been able to achieve really good numbers in that sense. So yeah, for me, he's had a really good season. No need to replace, no need to worry too much if he is starting next year, which we expect him to. But it is nice to have the option of some great goalkeeping talent coming through in Walton, Sanchez and Carl Rushworth. And if you want to read about such great youth prospects, then please go and check out Liam's amazing, amazing article on all of our under-23 prospects. If you haven't read it already, it's really detailed. Strong analysis on basically the amazing conveyor belt of talent that we have got coming out of our academy. So if you want to read about the goalkeepers and other players that we've got coming through our academy, then go check that out. It'll be on the Twitter page.
I appreciate the plug, Charlie. The one difficult thing about having written that article now is all the other youth players that we're signing and developing now that I didn't have room to fit on the article, that people are, you know, reminding me on a daily basis of, oh, you've left this player out. Well, it was 23, under 23s to be cool and edgy. So I unfortunately had to leave some players out. But I fully agree with you on Ryan. Perhaps was under a lot of criticism, particularly the City game sticks in the mind. And when you sort of look at the numbers and the amount of big chances we conceded close to 5 XG anyway. So to sort of sit there and say that the keeper is the last line of defence is a problem for that. I think if you're conceding that level of XG, you've got serious problems elsewhere. I think, you know, primarily you need to stop conceding such, you know, easy chances to convert before you ever got the keeper for not saving them. And I think Ryan as well deserves a lot more credit than what he's got. You know, everyone's sort of been full of praise for how we've changed style as a team. I think Ryan perhaps has individually perhaps changed the most in terms of launching, I think last season, about 90% of his goal kicks to being one of the shortest playing goalkeepers in the league this season and still maintaining an extraordinary sort of launch pass completion rate. I think Edison and Alisson, I believe, are the only keepers in the Premier League to have over 50% success rate when playing long, which is, you know, really, really good company to be in, you know, for a keeper who gets as much stick from the fan base that he does. But I agree with you, Charlie. He should hopefully benefit from some competition. But another solid season, again, playing all the games, incredibly reliable. No complaints with Ryan. And for a keeper that we paid less than £10 million for, was, you know, sort of repaid that and the rest of it. On to Lewis Dunk then, who we've obviously spoken deservedly lots about. For me, another excellent season. The only worry with him having another good season is he might be off somewhere. A ridiculously good ball player, able to break lines comfortably. Showed that from literally day one against Watford. I remember screaming for Finlay Wampai to score because it was such a good ball in behind, which I think the away end angle only made it look even better as he sort of split all the defenders. And then to be the typical Dunk player and, you know, be involved in 6 goals, which for a centre-back is a ridiculous amount of goals to be involved in. And then in the last 9 games of the season to say, you know what, I'll box defend as well. He's there at Southampton blocking shots on the goal line. He's throwing himself in front of the ball. He's, you know, what can't this bloke do besides play for England at this moment in time?
He is a exceptional talent. I cannot really express in words how important he is to us and how enjoyable it's been to see him develop and grow from an 18-year-old into the club captain. And that does mean something because I'm an English literature graduate, so I should be able to describe some things at least, but this is something that I will not even try. It's fantastic to have him at the club. It's sort of equal measure indulgent to see him playing for us and putting such Rolls-Royce performances in week in, week out, and frustrating that he doesn't get the plaudits and the opportunities that he deserves internationally and beyond. He's Mr. Reliable, but he's more than Mr. Reliable. He's Mr. Always puts in exceptional performances and has the ability to absolutely own games from centre back. I do strongly believe that he's good enough to play for almost any team. I don't think he'd let himself down playing at any level. Obviously, we have such a amazing pool of centre backs at the moment, but he is one who, for all the talk about the potential of young Ben White and indeed the Champions League experience of new signing Veltman, I still believe he's head and shoulders above anything that we have.
Yeah, I don't think that's a disservice to them either to say that they're not quite up to Dunk standards yet, because he is an exceptional centre-back. So unfortunately, you'd have to move on from Dunk. We'll try and rattle through some of these a bit faster to avoid sending people to sleep. But Dan Byrne, a player that I personally can't speak highly enough of, there'll be a thread hopefully coming out of him soon, sort of looking at some of his numbers. For anyone that wants to access the numbers as well, there's a full thread that I'll link off the pod, which looks at all the players' individual sort of season by numbers. I know people are quite a big fan of sort of the individual performances by numbers after games, so we've done that for the whole season and broke them all down. And Dan Byrne, a really good ball player, a player who's come to in multiple positions, which obviously is great for Potter. An aerial menace, someone who causes havoc at set pieces, and I think he's a big part of the reason that, you know, Duncan Webster have had such good goal involvements. Although, you know, Byrne himself has missed a couple of chances. Unfortunate to have a couple of goals ruled out offside with VAR. And an assist as well that Charlotte's obviously mentioned with Trossard against West Ham on the opening home match day of the season. A player who I think is you know, taken a lot of people by surprise in terms of that they weren't, you know, quite expecting this to come from him this season. I think he's been a really consistent player, gets pressed an awful lot as well, incredibly composed, must be a good leader you'd expect in the dressing room as well. You know, just judging by the way that he acts on the pitch, I think becoming an integral part of the side.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The consistency that he's shown, the versatility also to play in different positions, has been really, really good. I think, I don't know if you can call him, you know, obviously he was signed prior as a Tuton signing, but he, in terms of now coming into the team for the first time this season, you know, maybe he's a kind of side. Candidate for signing of the season in with an asterisk next to it. Yeah, he, no one could have expected what the output that he's kind of brought in. I think that it's testament to his mentality and his ability as well. You saw the clip of him bringing down that that pass or rather that sky high hoof at the Etihad. Mm. High five of Aguero, and you know he's obviously a very talented footballer, and kind of his physical attributes maybe distract people enough that they make assumptions about him that he might not be quite as talented as other footballers in our squad. And I think it's, you know, that's a disservice. I think he's a really, really strong player, and I'm very comfortable when I see him in the starting 11.
I think his minutes played as well sort of reflect all of that, Charlotte. It's sort of what you've said. I think, you know, it's testament to how good he really must be if Potter's giving him this amount of game time across sort of this many positions. And then another player who's probably quite unfairly scapegoated, Davy Proper, a player who can be very aesthetic to watch on the ball, admittedly fluctuates in terms of his levels of performance. And I think that's because he's capable of performing so well. You know, you have to remember that at the end of the day, these players are human beings. But I think it's difficult for fans to understand sometimes why a player can't always perform consistently, which is fair. It is their job. They are paid a lot of money. But Davy Proper, for me, you know, one of our best technical players, absolutely outstanding to watch him sort of Dale Stevens become incredibly good line breakers. I know they were at one point in time prior to lockdown, they were ranking in the top 10 centimetres in the Premier League in terms of line breaking passes per game, and two integral players to the way that we're playing now. You know, a player who might have more of an involvement in front of goal, but I don't think his golden assist returns have been bad at all. I think, you know, that's made up for elsewhere. As we've spoken about, Charlie, with the amount of goals we've been scoring, is most definitely not a problem. You know, a player who is just a joy to watch at times.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think it's a real, the performance levels from so many of our players have been really, really strong. And I think that, I don't want to say that there's definitely more to come, because the sort of pressure is there. It's because it's a first season with Potter and first season with many of our players. You know, without being too depressing, might be that, you know, might be a peak season for them. Might be an exceptional season in multiple players' cases. But in terms of the young players that we've got coming through, and in terms of, let's say, the XG, the chances created, and some games that maybe got away, I think there's many individuals who can really kick on and hit, you know, emphatic numbers next year. I think Morpay, obviously, is XG, just as an example. He, you know, underperformed slightly. So I think he's got the potential in terms of the quality and the way the team is kind of shaping up to hit some really, really big numbers next year. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
We will. I think we can skip over Webster and Mapai. I feel like we've covered them in sort of enough detail. But yeah, sort of one correct. Final point on Mapai. I think he's the sixth striker in Premier League history that's French to score 10 plus in his debut season, with, I think, Martial was most recent before him in 17-18. So, you know, it can be hard to adapt. I know, obviously, he's come from Brentford and not directly from France. But, you know, not a bad season by any stretch of the imagination. A very, very decent season. You know, to have a striker once again score 10 plus you in the Prem, you know, I think is a great fallback for sort of any manager to know that they've got that sort of reliability. But yeah, I think we've covered Webster and Mapai in sort of enough detail. So to sort of touch on Moy, who's been a player who has been really good this season, sort of until he became a permanent player, who I still don't think was sort of bad after, a player who is probably the most balanced of any of the attacking midfielders that we've got. You know, isn't a bad buy at all. Charlie, what have you made of him?
Yeah, I think, funnily enough, this was he was the one that when we were discussing the podcast beforehand and we were thinking about talking about the player performances and we thought about ratings, he was kind of the example that we used to kind of suggest why ratings, single numbers, not really the best way to indicate a player's performance, because he would be very much a player that you could split into two halves over the season. Yeah, so strong, so good. Technically, fantastic. Really, like, he's probably one of the most technically gifted players we've had play for us in a very long time. I like his energy, and I think obviously there's a lack of pace there that people maybe don't find great, especially when he's playing sort of slightly wider and in a sort of narrow 4-4-2. But I think he's obviously a very I don't want to say steady, because that's almost a disservice to him, but yeah, he's someone who doesn't let you down. He was very unlucky to be sent off at Aston Villa. I was at the game, and yeah, I think it was a bit inexplicable, a bit strange from the referee not to give him the prior warning. It was a bit of a, you know, one of them was for sort of kicking the ball away, and you know, in first half, it was just, you know, you don't normally see that too much. So I expect that he will play a strong role again next year, but it will be interesting to see how he fits in, obviously, with Lallana coming in, and McAllister will be hoping in himself that he will be able to get some more minutes under his belt. So it's a wait and see.
Definitely, I think for the money that we paid, by no means a bad buy at all. You know, some sort of a compatriot of Matty Ryan's as well. Yeah, a player I think has been, you know, as decent as you'd expect him to be. He's never probably going to be the player to steal the show in the way that Mapai or perhaps Trossard would. But he's a player that makes things tick. He, you know, a lovely assist as well for Trossard in that goal against Norwich. So, you know, I think a player who perhaps, you know, doesn't always get the plaudits he deserves, and you know, maybe doesn't need to get the plaudits he deserves either in terms of his style of player. I'm not sure if that's the sort of player. To move on to Montoy then, a player who's obviously been boxed out a bit by Lamptey, which, you know, goes a long way to sort of show how good he's been. But I Charlie, still thought Montoy was incredibly good. Perhaps, you know, his expectations from some fans are quite high given his pedigree of Barca and Inter, but I still think he's been a really quality right back. His, you know, his crossing output's always ridiculously good. So a player that's once again impressed me. Not necessarily upset to see him, you know, Lamptey come in and take his place. I think it's a different dimension, and Lamptey's warranted his place so far. But you know, what do you make of Montoya?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think obviously now that Lamptey's come in, I think people might be a bit too keen to kind of dump Montoya and think that Lamptey is going to be able to come in and nail down that right back spot. Obviously, Veltman's an option there too now. I obviously, Lamptey's a really, really exciting young player. He's going to make loads of mistakes next year, and I can't wait, because the fact is that you need to play, you need to make those mistakes. You need to kind of go through that development as a player to learn and to get to improve. And I think that if we want him to kind of hit the heights that he can, I think it's best to just try and integrate him into the team as much as possible. Obviously, you hope that he makes as little mistakes as possible, but, you know, it's just an inevitability at that age. He was targeted at Southampton. He's, you know, he had a bit of a torrid time playing for a lot of the pitch against Manchester United. So, you know, he's by no means the finished article. Montoya ranks really highly for accurate crosses. I had him in my fantasy football team right at the start of last year because we were playing a wing-back system and he was getting really high at the pitch and was putting in really dangerous crosses. Unfortunately, that was one that didn't really work out. He wasn't able to get assist numbers that would kind of propel me up the tables and incentivize me to keep him. But I still think his attacking output statistically is really, really strong, and he has the ability to shackle players defensively too. I think he's actually a much better defender than people give him credit for.
I'd agree on that. I think even if, sort of worst case, him and Lamptey are now competing for that right back spot, I think that's, you know, two incredibly different players, but, you know, two good quality players to battle it out. So I think if that's, you know, if that's the point that we've reached now as a club where, you know, we've got extremely good players competing for positions. I think that's a great spot to be in. Which to move on to Trossard then, someone who's had a very good output by the end of the season. You know, perhaps didn't quite look like he was able to hit those numbers, you know, sort of pre-lockdown, but, you know, sort of found a real purple patch post-lockdown. It can be a bit hit and miss, Charlie. You know, didn't get an away goal involvement until, I believe, Norwich away. But, you know, was sort of exceptional at home, scored some nice and important goals, and a real stylistic player to watch.
Yeah, really, really tricky. Just in terms of enjoyment. I mean, I know his output's been decent. Five goals in debut season, and with, let's say, I don't say limited minutes, but like he, you know, he didn't start every single game. He was often coming off the bench and actually being effective in that role. So that's a decent output, and it's just exciting to watch. I really like him when he takes players on. I think he's very, very skillful. There's a goal. I think it was the second goal against Wolves, I think it was, where he kind of cut back and put a cross in for Proper to head it.
Floated one for Proper, yes. Yeah. I think he went one way then back the other, didn't he? Yeah,
that sort of thing is, you know, he's really, really talented in that sense. The Moy goal against Bournemouth again, just really inventive play. And you want players like that in your squad. So the options that he's given us have been great. I like his attitude. I think he's got a lot more to give as well. So seeing as his Chiedo appears to be permanently broken.
Yes. Return to sender.
Good import from the Belgian league, in my view.
I think the real beauty with Trossard is the way that he sort of combines aesthetics with output, in the sense that I think as sort of a manager for Potty, he's got a player there that, you know, his shot creation is ridiculously good in terms of for himself and for other players, which is something not a lot of players can do. You know, not a lot of players have got the ability to take players on, create their own shooting angles, as well as, you know, use both feet, putting crosses, break lines. So that's really valuable to be such a versatile creator. And Charlie, I think that's one of the reasons why, to move on to Gross now, I think that's one of the reasons why they work sort of so well either side of Mapai, because, you know, they're two incredibly different players. Gross provides, you know, one of the best dead balls in the league. For 30s and running has put up, you know, the best XA, the best chance creation stats for a Brighton player who, like Moy, gets perhaps criticism for, you know, physically maybe being a bit slower, not quite having the directness and attack of the ball carrying that Trossard might do. But, you know, do the numbers lie?
Well, I think that Gross's output is always kind of overlooked, just more broadly. I think he's been unlucky this year not to rack up more assists. His chance creation is just you know, it never stops. He's perpetually being productive with the ball, very efficient. And you love that. I love that in a player. It's one of those where he seems to kind of put out so much, but, you know, he hasn't been able to kind of hit the heights of his first season. I know he struggled with injury the year previous, and maybe he was seen as, you know, he was relied on a little bit too much right towards the end of the season, where he was, I think I remember the Newcastle game. I wrote a piece on that where, you know, he was out on the right for the first half and it was an absolute disaster. Felt really sorry for him trying to kind of fit in that just disastrous kind of disastrous setup. And once he was put in his natural position right behind the striker and he was able to kind of find space in between the lines, I think that's where he's best. In my view, if you can get him close to the goal and facing the goal, also I think is the most important thing. If you can get him on the ball near in the opposition half, then he's always going to do damage. Probably worth mentioning his ground covered too. I know people don't like his lack of pace, but he really does cover a lot of ground, and that is a really strong defensive asset for us. So he's a player that, you know, won't let you down when he's in the starting 11.
Definitely, and I think as well, I very reluctantly had to leave him out of goal of the season sort of suggestions. I was hoping to sort of push that one at West Ham, an absolute screamer. You know, not quite sure that Fabianski was ever going to get any chance of saving that. Without a shadow of a doubt, probably the weirdest goal I think I've ever seen. But I think that was perhaps testament to Charlie, to the way that he plays, and that, okay, he's not the fastest, he's not got the best acceleration, but it's the sort of player that will sort of run, will cover your ground. I remember when we beat United 1-0 in 17-18, I remember watching sort of him and Murray, is sort of the two, sort of the first line of defence, and Gross just, you know, non-stop pressing, not necessarily at top speeds, but just hassling defenders, spoiling build-up play, making life difficult for them. And, you know, those sorts of players, as hopefully Adam Lallana will show as well, there's a thread out on the Twitter page about him now. He's also created goals from sort of pressing scenarios of sometimes, you know, you have to make your own chances as players. And I think, you know, that's testament to Gross, as someone who might not aesthetically be the most pleasing, but, you know, will give you ridiculously good volumes of sort of everything else. And I think that's a real fair trade-off. And you sort of spoke, Charlie, as well about his threat facing goal and being close to the goal. So I think we can skip over Bissouma, because I think we've covered him in more than enough detail. And this also now gives sort of a nice segue into Aaron Connolly, who obviously Gross created that chance for at Newcastle, with sort of a delightful around-the-corner flick pass. Connolly's someone, obviously, who, you know, it's similar to Gross, but in sort of the game format, in that instead of it being sort of a full season, Connolly, you know, took the league by storm in that debut game against Spurs, which was a really, really difficult level of performance for him to sort of replicate. I thought, you know, he's not really got much chance, and people expecting him to sort of come in with braces and these sorts of performances was, you know, really tough on him, and perhaps didn't do himself sort of the justice he required. But, you know, got another goal against Burnley, a really nice, well-taken finish in sort of his trademark left-hand half-space area. And I think even better than that, was the assist from Mapai. I thought it was a lovely orchestrated pattern of play from McAllister punching that pass in. Obviously, a well-rehearsed, perfectly timed, perfectly executed piece of play. But I thought a delightful way to pass for someone who, in all fairness to him, started the season as a teenager with no senior football. I think he had about half an hour for Luton out on loan. So, you know, to come into the toughest league in the world under an immense amount of pressure with no actual professional football experience, going straight from academy football to this, I think he's been very good, Charlie. What do you make of him?
Yeah, I agree. I think that he's had an injury that's being managed over the year. I think that it would be unfair to expect too much more from him to considering the step up in quality. Reading the article that was in the news recently about the fact that he wants to repay the faith that Potter's shown in him and the reasonable attitude that he's had in terms of saying to him, I don't expect you to come in and score 10, 15 goals. You know, we're here to develop you. We're here to help you progress and integrate you in. I think that's really, really positive. Confidence is so massive when you're a striker. And I like the idea of keeping our forwards in a sweet spot where they feel as though they are contributing, they feel as though they aren't under pressure from the manager, even when they haven't scored in a while. You know, he went a long time, obviously, without from scoring on his home debut, I believe it was. Getting another goal right on the last day. But
the match winner as well, the match winner.
Yeah, he'll improve more and more. And I think it's helpful that he doesn't have too much kind of pressure on his shoulders in terms of being expected to lead the line and be the main man. I think that will come with time. I think there'll be a moment where he'll want to, you know, take that responsibility on. But as it stands, I think that he is in a really good position to learn with Murray still in the squad. And I think that he will continue to get. He's a natural goal scorer. That's the main thing. The finish Tottenham and the finish against Burnley, both in that left hand space that you talk about, it's so natural to him. And looking at some of his compilations and some of thinking back to some of the games that I've watched him playing for the under 23s, you know, he really is a very natural, eager finisher. He has confidence in his ability to score from pretty much anywhere. So I look forward to seeing how he continues to develop.
I think it's quite refreshing as well to still see him scoring the same sort of goals he was scoring at under 23 level. So he's not had to necessarily change his dynamic of play. You see, you know, some players come up and, you know, they've got to fill a void, but, you know, he's coming up and, you know, you watch him play under 23 games. I think it's at Leicester, he played one this season in, it might have been the start of September before sort of his breakthrough. Scored an incredibly similar goal to the one he scored against Spurs. So, you know, this is a player who's coming along who, similar to Alzate, who we'll touch on soon, is, you know, coming along and has a bit of arrogance about him. But I think to be a top-level striker, I think you need some arrogance about you in your play to come and say, you know, I'm coming into the best league in the world, but I'm still going to do what I did, you know, against all these other youth players, I think is really admirable. And yeah, hopefully, you know, he builds on his output next season and perhaps gets more plaudits for doing so. To move on then to obviously his international counterpart in Shane Duffy, someone who we saw less of this season, but I thought, you know, when he was called upon, fulfilled his role expertly well, especially in sort of the last few games.
Yeah, I think that he, you know, he's obviously looks like he's on his way out, unfortunately, but I think that he's demonstrated that he can, you know, he has something to offer. He's obviously a very strong defender, and the partnership with Dunk has served us really well over the last few years. You know, he's a good leader on the pitch. I like his attributes. I think that he can he can marshal a defence in a really strong way. I think he's maybe, I don't think his passing ability is as bad as people maybe think. Obviously, I think when they're out of when they're out of the team, and Webster has come in and done as well as he has with taking the ball up the field and distributing it, then maybe people seem to kind of pigeonhole Duffy being as just, you know, useless with the ball and only able to head it, which just isn't really the case. So wherever he ends up, and I assume he is leaving, as per reports, I know that he'll do really well, and he will be a pain to play against if it is the Premier League. He will be a massive pain to play against, make no mistake about it.
I think particularly with our style of play, he's shown over the years that he can, you know, he's the perfect player to sort of thwart teams that want to be expansive and play into your box, that he's got the ability to be a real thorn on the side for them. So I agree with you, Charlie. I think he'll be horrible to play against, but someone who deserves regular minutes with his ability, and will hopefully go and get them wherever he sort of chooses. I mean, I know Celtic's the obvious connection for him. I believe West Brom are interested as well. Obviously, I prefer him to go to Celtic so that he doesn't play against us. But, you know, yeah, he'll get minutes somewhere and deservedly so. To come on to Steven Arzate then, player who obviously we've not mentioned his Newcastle debut at any point in this pod. We should really touch on it at some point. But, you know, he's been Mr. Versatile for Potter this season. Unfortunately, didn't feature in the last 9 games due to injury. But, you know, capped by Colombia, a real aesthetic player, similar to Trossard in the sense that, you know, a real player who oozes confidence on the ball. We've obviously mentioned his back heel in that build up to the Everton goal. Is the sky the limit for Arzate?
Yeah, I love him. I think he's going to be so good. The way he drives forward from midfield, his composure, confidence, I think, is really, really great. His versatility is also massive. I think it'd be a bit of a strange one, but when I am indulging in a bit of FIFA, the players' personalities are absolutely ingrained into you when you're sort of playing for fun. And when I have the ball with Arzate, I am, you know, he's a very expressive kind of player. I like his the fact that he will try a nutmeg. He will try and kind of play that risky pass. The personality that he brings and the confidence is really refreshing. But then given that, I think that he fits well, and he's obviously very disciplined and he's not a liability in any way being a young player. And that's the key thing that you look for when you try and integrate some of the younger talent in. I wonder what his best position is and what it might end up being. As we've talked about before, players can kind of change and hone their roles and develop into kind of different sort of players than they were when they were a little bit younger, Solly March and Bissouma being the key examples. So who knows where he could end up. I think we probably need a few more centre backs, so I guess he could train
just a couple. Yeah. And most important with Arzate, 4 nutmegs a season, which is the joint most of any Brighton player. So a crucial statistic for someone to lead the way. Speaking then of sort of versatile players, we come with Solly March, who has become incredibly Marmite for no reason whatsoever in sort of the Brighton sphere, purely because I think the fact that he's obviously, as you mentioned before, Charlie, that he's become more defensive, having been sort of a more advanced player in his time. A player who perhaps should have been better than what he has been at Brighton, but, you know, he's by no means a bad player. A very useful player in the sense that he can fill you multiple positions. He has the capacity to be involved in multiple phases of the game. A good cross for the ball. And for me, one of our best strikers of the ball, which, you know, I tell lots of people that I think his composure lets him down often in front of goal. I don't think he's an exceptional one-touch finisher, but I think, you know, we've seen in the past that he can really hit a ball from range really well with great power, great precision, great accuracy. And someone that Potter clearly values to sort of give him enough minutes, who might now be more of a squad player, more of a rotation player. But, you know, I think he offers you the versatility other players don't, which I think is perhaps underrated.
Yeah, I think he can be frustrating in terms of what he could have been and what he can still be, I suppose. He can play multiple areas of the pitch, offensively and defensively. I think that's pleasing for a manager, but maybe slightly frustrating for fans. I think that everyone knows what he's capable of. Obviously, coming on against West Ham away, and he was just so, so good.
Mm.
And then I can't remember what the game was after that, but he was the worst player on the pitch in the first half, and it's just so...
Might have been Watford.
Yeah, just naff, man. You know, it really worries me. The confidence, I don't think he quite has. I don't know what it is that's kind of stopped him in that way. I've mentioned before that players, you know, great professionals, Bruno, Murray, have said about him in training, saying he's so frustrating because we know he's like the, you know, one of the best players in training. He goes past people easily and puts it in the top corner. As you say, he can really strike a ball. Had that free kick saved against West Ham again, right towards the end when we nearly snatched a win. And I still sometimes dream of that strike away at Arsenal going in off the,
inside of the post. Oh.
That would have been glorious. That probably would have been, I mean, that might have been goal of the season if we got people have had a positive association with that moment. But
precisely, yeah, fine margins.
Yeah, so, you know, again, fine, as you're saying, fine margins. He's a very much a nearly player at the moment, but does he have the ability? 100%, I believe so. So, you know, he's a player that I would not be surprised to see kick on and start to tear it up eventually.
Yeah, fingers crossed, he might be a late-blooming player. I still remember that a gorgeous strike he hit at Lincoln away in the Cup. One of the sweetest hits of the football I've ever seen. It was sort of reminiscent of that Dimitri Payet one against Crystal Palace. When it, you know, the height, sort of the peak of the trajectory of the ball to be so high and then dip on. And as much as I'm a fan of the aesthetics of a ball smacking against the woodwork, I was gutted it couldn't have done that and gone in as well. But without digressing too much, we'll move on to Glenn Murray, who obviously someone who had limited minutes this season, didn't put up the output that he did in the last two seasons, but I don't think he had to at the same time. Was delighted to have been there when he got that goal against West Ham, and admittedly it wasn't in the circumstances he would have liked, but you know, he did what he had to do, which was continue his amazing record against West Ham and you know provide Brighton with what was a crucial point. And quite literally, without Glenn Murray, I think we would have been sat in the bottom three that day, which I think, Charlie, you agree is sort of typical Glenn Murray, to not really do anything across, you know, certain months of a season and then pop up with a goal that keeps Brighton at the bottom three.
Yeah, I mean, his goal record speaks for itself. He will continue to score goals wherever he is. I was talking the other day about, you know, what his goals might be in terms of if he did want to leave, what kind of level he might want to feature at. For me, if I'm a bottom half Premier League team and he's available on loan, I don't care what I have to do to get him in. He's in. He scores, you know, consistently for, you know, he's proven that he has that ability to score crucial goals and can contribute really strongly in that way. And testament to Morpai, I guess, for keeping him out of the team and showing that he's got the ability to kind of produce a strong output as well and contribute to the team in that way. I'm very happy to have Murray around in terms of developing the younger players, but also just as a good influence, a good character. But to kind of suggest his experience and character are his kind of primary attributes maybe does a disservice to his goal record. If he's in the team, again, it's another player that I always feel comfortable seeing on the team sheet and thinking, yeah, he could score a goal or two today for sure.
I think so. I think that's been Murray's whole career, if we're going to be fair to him. A player that's understandably rated by so many managers. I've heard Chris Hughton speak so passionately about him and say that, you know, as a manager, as a fullback plan, like Mapai showing this season, of, you know, you put Murray in your team, he's going to get you goals. So, you know, I think that speaks for itself. 2-1 to Bernardo then, someone who also sort of had limited minutes this season, I believe he was injured for quite a period of time, but sort of did show numerically, if you look at sort of the per 90 numbers, you know, shows a real voluminous output. To try to think someone that we might see more from going forward.
Yeah, I think as we kind of go on, we are we've got so many attacking options. Like, you kind of feel as though who's going to be left out, and what's actually going to, how are we going to fit them all into a team? Are we going to fit them all into a team? You know, are we going to see the same level of rotation that we saw this season, which for some was frustrating, for some refreshing? Do you have kind of players alternating in, and kind of, you know, even though they perform well, they get taken out because, you know, the games are tailored for the opposition. And if that's not the case, then you could imagine if players start well, then, you know, there are some very talented players that could see themselves constantly out of the side. And I think, yeah, that the same goes for them. I think that they, again, you know, talent they've shown is clear, and it is exciting to see where we can, you know, how we're going to fit all these players in. And you know, it's almost a law of averages. I feel as if we've got so many players that I feel are really, really good in terms of ability. I think that surely some of them must have, at least one will have a great season, right?
Speaking of one that should have a great season, Tariq Lamptey has been someone that took the whole league by storm really after lockdown. I think just the speed that he hits in terms of, and I was saying this to people the other day, that it's not just a case of like the top speeds that he runs at, they are ridiculously fast. And for anyone who wants an in-depth read on him, I did do a piece recently for Scouted Football that's up on the Twitter page. Please don't give it a read. It's a nice piece looking at all sort of the underlying numbers. So I won't touch them too much here because you can find them out for yourself if you'd like to see them. But for me, Charlie, the consistency at which he, you know, is able to continuously run at good speeds, the energy that he shows, incredibly resilient. I remember him on debut at Leicester getting whacked in the face early on, you know, got some Vaseline on the cut and just sort of kept going. A real trooper, wins a lot of fouls, which for us as a good set piece side is massively important. And just, he's just high volume, high output, which you don't often get with these fullbacks. You know, he's so prepared and confident to take on these really good midfielders, these really good defenders, and does it at such high rates. I'm still convinced that he runs too fast to, you know, actually be able to have a good end product. I don't think he's a bad cross of the ball. I just think that he runs too fast to be able to kick it well at the same time. I don't think he can sort his legs out, which is perfectly fine because he plays around enough good creators that I think, you know, and he showed that he can do it. On final day at Burnley, was creating chances, set up Trossard obviously against Liverpool. But someone who is either going to be a really good player for us, which I hope, number one, obviously, or it's going to make us a lot of money when we send him on to someone else. And number three, someone that I hope will play for England one day in some capacity.
Yeah, I expect him to kind of feature for England at some point. I think naturally that the drawback is maybe his height. I suppose that can be an issue for some. And we are pretty well stocked in the fullback kind of zone. But you know, I do expect him to push on entirely. I think the fouls thing is kind of an under the radar attribute that you're kind of right to bring up. That's going to be really important if we can continue to threaten at set pieces. I wonder obviously Byrne didn't score a goal this season, but he did have one chalked off for offside VAR call, which was ridiculous.
Yes. That was just kneecap, wasn't it? That was, yeah, apparently a hair offside or something.
But if obviously he didn't score, but if White is coming into the team, White only scored one goal last season. Okay. And it was a nice volley, to be fair, on the last day of the season, I believe.
Yes, yeah.
It was a nice goal,
but into the top corner.
Didn't really show all that much in terms of attacking output from set pieces. And that's not to say that, you know, it's not a major criticism, but, you know, you wonder in terms of, you know, losing the output from set pieces, depending on which personnel we go with. That's something to bear in mind. But if we do continue our form from set pieces, then Lamptey's ability to win fouls will be absolutely massive for us.
That's something we perhaps should have picked up before for Aaron Connolly as well, who, by the way, does it at extremely similar high rates, you know, which I think maybe as young players, they perhaps get targeted by some of the older players, if, you know, these teenagers who they, you know, don't want to get taken on by, etc. But you know that they're incredibly good at winning fouls, which yeah, is valuable and perhaps underrated, as you mentioned, Charlie, as well. We'll skip out Schlotto and the rest of the players who aren't any longer at the club. They also had, you know, incredibly small sample sizes minutes-wise, so not a whole host to say about them. So we'll touch on to the last two now, which are Alexis McAllister and Alireza Yihambash. So firstly to Alexis, Charlie, someone who we obviously didn't see too much of and came back with a big sort of media PR storm from Boca. For me, most impressed by sort of his work rate in terms of his pressing. He's an absolute hustler off the ball. Didn't quite see like the creation output that we might have liked to see. But, you know, showed against Arsenal that he's capable of breaking lines and setting up goals.
Yeah, again, just a wealth of options in attacking midfield. I was a bit concerned when we brought him back because I didn't feel as though we needed that kind of player in that position at the time. It's nice to have him now. It's, you know, I became aware that it was we may have found it more difficult to bring him in and to sort his work permit had we not taken the opportunity at the time, because he would have had to meet requirements again later on. So good to have him in the building. Looks a really talented player. I like set piece output, not just crossing, but can strike one as well. Really, really strong performances in the under 23s tournament for Argentina. It did say when talking about him and how he's developed as a player that over time, whatever team he's gone into, he has ended up being the main set piece taker, and it would be very impressive if he's able to wrestle that off Trossard and Gross and Moy in terms of set pieces. If he can nail that down, I will be very, very, very impressed, because he's up against stiff competition in that sense.
Hopefully, though, that will be the sort of competition that he needs to sort of kick on, develop him. And yeah, hopefully, as we've seen before, competition can really sort of push players on, can breed success. So I don't think it can be a bad thing at all. It just might mean that something has to give, whether that be McAllister being here or somewhere else, or whether that be, our set piece takers changing. On to the last one then, which is Alireza Yihambash, someone who, again, had an incredibly limited amount of minutes this season. Showed glimpses of his talent. Obviously, he's, you know, the proud winner of one of the Goal of the Season awards from the Expected Goals podcast. So he'll be delighted to hear that. But perhaps someone who, you know, might be out the door as well, Charlie, that, you know, showed a lot of energy, a lot of desire to succeed here. Delighted for him that he finally got, you know, the monkey off his back, so to speak, in terms of finally getting a goal and breaking that hoodoo. But perhaps someone that just hasn't quite worked out.
I feel sorry for him because I like him a lot as a player, and I think he offers a lot. I think he's very diligent, and I think that he, in terms of quality, I think he's got it. I think he can strike a ball really well. We saw the goals that he did score. He can hit a ball, and he's keen to shoot, which is always nice to see. Works extremely hard, whatever position he's playing. And again, he's probably one that I feel when he's on the team sheet, I'm not unhappy at all. I'm excited that he can he's gonna be able to do a job for us. And I am disappointed that things haven't worked out. I am very comfortable with the idea of keeping him because he offers something that we probably don't have so much of, which is natural width. I expect that, you know, it is. You know, getting towards the time where we have to kind of cut our losses and say he'll have to move on, and whether that's, you know, his perspective or the club's, it's, you know, neither here nor there. But I'm happy to keep him. I think that he can do a job. But the competition, the level that we're moving up to, with, you know, you've got the likes of Lallana coming in, it's just becoming more and more difficult for us to. I don't want to say carry players, because I don't mean to say that he's been a liability in that sense. He's, you know, he's always done his bit in terms of output and effort, but in terms of quality, you know, we're moving on,
which is quite a refreshing place to be in. You know, to have the capacity now where we can say, look, certain players we can now start to force out the team if we're really developing as a side, which I think is really, really promising as we move into next season, Charlie, and looking now at some of the quality that we're bringing in on the transfer front. And we'll cover this in the next episode of the pod. We'll wrap this up for now, because we've obviously been talking for quite a while. So for anyone that has made it this far, you know, thank you very much for listening, and a huge congrats as well for staying awake and not falling asleep, as Charlie and I droning on our in our dulcet tones. But yeah, we'll pick this up then in the next episode. We'll give a bit more of a season preview now. We sort of looked back at, obviously, last season. We can just now look forward and chat more about the signings. And, you know, but by the time it comes to it, we may well have added to it. And yeah, look forward to a season now, which is less than 4 weeks away, I believe.
Yeah, I'm excited for the new season already, as I said. We will be back soon with a preview pod. One thing that has gone up today, we'll just mention before we sign off, was a poll regarding a FPL league. So we're trying to integrate some more of that kind of stuff into our preview. And if you are interested in fantasy football, if you're interested in a Albion Analytics fantasy football league, then please do go vote yes on the poll. And we can probably sort that out. And who knows, there may even be some prizes sorted by my good self. Who knows? So yeah, go and vote on the poll. And
lovely stuff. Yeah. I picture you sat there making numerous fake accounts, Charlie, so that you can vote yes on it to really ensure.
Sorry. Well, it's less competition if I don't. So you know,
that's true. Yes, there you go.
Yeah. Guys, you really don't. I won't shut up about it.
We love it, but I think we'll end it there for today. We've spoken for more than enough time, but I think, Charlie, it was a very good season, which deserves sort of a comprehensive review. I think it's given it's sort of well deserved look back out there. Anything else to say, Charlie, before we depart?
No, that's all from me. But yeah, thanks very much for listening, guys.
All good. Well, we shall see you in the next episode.